Welcome to the Agents Angle, where we shine a spotlight into the often peculiar world of football and soccer agents. I'm Jonathan Booker.
And I'm Peter Palaiologos. After a week where we did our best to replicate a subdued January transfer window, we reflect on why things were so quiet in January, not least for agents. We also take a look at how one potential transfer in the January window was possibly derailed by an agent-related dispute.
We also cast a sideways glance towards Tokyo, where FIFA held their football law annual review, with some agent-related matters featuring prominently on the agenda.
All that to come on this episode of The Agent's Angle.
So after reverting to a two-week schedule for the show, we now find ourselves inundated with topics to discuss, Peter. But nice to have a week sabbatical, to an extent, if only to regroup. But plenty has happened in the intervening period, and it is no surprise we could possibly fill two shows with what we have lined up. So we better crack on with this one. And despite what many have said was an astoundingly quiet transfer window, there was quite a bit of agent activity, albeit not big transfers.
It was, I agree, quite a strange transfer window period. Not a lot of big deals, some big name loans, Tottenham and Timo Werner, some deals that were speculated but never got off the ground. There were quite a few contract extensions, especially in France. Two clubs that did catch my eye this window and did some good business and some good deals was Bayern Munich in Germany and Genoa in Italy. They were quite active in signing players. I would say outside of Europe, Australia, being a smaller market, had quite a few deals, four or five come through, but also three young goalkeepers went to the UK to Premier League clubs from Australian transfers. So that was quite interesting. And also some of my contacts, the Balkan leagues like Greece and Romania were quite active.
I think it's the hope and expectation that kills us a lot of the time with the transfer window, whether you're a fan, a sports journalist or an agent. And the simple fact is there's a lot of uncertainty at the moment over such things as financial fair play, breakaway leagues and agent regulations. So I think the word for this window was cautious. We've probably all come to expect a busy and exciting transfer window, and this time it just didn't happen. But was it quiet or just quieter than normal?
I would say the latter. I believe it's also an issue here now of how transfers are paid for. We've seen in previous windows record-breaking transfers, large amount of transfer money. This is going to catch up with clubs. It's left clubs with debts. And we know the way that transfer payments work. They're always upfront. In fact, a lot of them are in installments because that also works with the tax and also the financial play rules. So many clubs either owe or some clubs have actually fallen behind in their transfer payment installments for previous deals. So I would say that's had a big impact and clubs are more careful. There's also not as many free agents on the market during the mid-season, as in free agents, top players. While also there's another trend, Jonathan, more loans and also pre-contracts. They've emerged as ways of signing players, not just straight out transfers.
Yeah, I was half expecting it to be quiet in England because there's a lot of biting of fingernails at the moment for some clubs over profit and sustainability, as we are starting to see clubs penalised with not just fines, but now some points deductions, and it is heavily rumoured more of those are to come in England. And that for some could mean relegation even from the English Premier League. And effectively, that's the killing of a cash cow that allows them to thrive. And it is quite often that a big transfer relating to England or Spain for that matter, although we've got Barcelona being restricted financially at the moment as well, that does trigger a domino effect in the transfer market. And possibly because that didn't happen as well, we didn't see that domino effect.
Yeah, we didn't see any Galactico-type move, did we? Real Madrid, we didn't see any Mbappe move or anything of that. But when those kind of moves happen, there's a lot of money in the market, and that didn't happen on this occasion. I think there are several key factors that are at play here, and one of them you just mentioned. very important with England. That's the Premier League's profitability and sustainability regulations. And they pretty much will affect how much money clubs can lose over a certain period of time. So we know, without mentioning too many clubs, Everton, Nottingham Forest, there's some issues there. And there's also some allegations against Manchester City. So all this, a lot of clubs at the back of their mind, there's a lot of rigorous regulation. There's a lot of people looking at them. So they've been a bit more careful. But also, outside of that, I was looking at Transfer Room, who we're going to probably discuss in a future episode. They seem to be quite quiet in their broking news and what deals came through them. But also a lot of WhatsApp groups I'm part of, this part of the world, especially in Asia and also North America and even Europe, they were quite quiet about transfers. So yes, it seems like it's across the board.
Yeah, I'll be quite honest. I was expecting some movements in the Saudi market, but reflecting back on that, I was actually probably being a bit naive because looking at it, the squads and the rosters are full there for a lot of the clubs. Some may have thought that the wealth they could afford to write off players they no longer wanted, but that wasn't the case. And again, that's another demonstration that the Saudi Pro League recruitment is quite shrewd and they aren't just going to throw money at everyone left, right and centre.
Yeah, as I said before, the big money needs to be received by one club by selling players, and that sort of sets up an upward spiral of transfer spending. But this window, there was no real Saudi club appetite for Premier League players. We didn't see much, so that's obviously slowed the market. Italian teams have spent less this transfer window as well, because I think I've discussed it in a previous episode. Their government recently scrapped the tax break of 50% on wages of sports clubs, new signings from abroad. And we know tax is a big issue. And we did that 2-3 episodes ago with Pete Fairchild. But that's had an impact on Italy. But there has been some other news that people haven't monitored in terms of the transfer market. There were two big signings in women's football in England. Chelsea broke the English transfer record for a women's player, Colombian international Maya Ramirez, £383,000, while Manchester City bought Laura Blindkild with a release clause of over £200,000. So in the women's game, there were some big transfers.
Are we also seeing the fact that some clubs have effectively kicked the can down the road financially in either already advancing fees on future revenues as far as they can, dare I say with the help of a vampire kangaroo, or are committed to paying in installments on past transfers, amongst other things? So effectively, as many in the media have pointed out this last week, clubs maybe don't have the liquidity and the money to spend, well, at least within the regulations, or can't forecast 100% accurately what guaranteed money they may have to spend in the future if, as you mentioned in the last episode, if they have a loan in or a loan out where it was an option to buy rather than an obligation to buy.
Firstly, I want to address this vampire kangaroo allegation, Jonathan. You're referring to an Australian bank that gets involved in transfer factoring. And this is a topic that I really want to go forward, where a bank lends money to a lot of Premier League clubs and they use that money in terms of transfers and from the broadcast rights or whatever, the bank will get its money back. But they're pretty secure because obviously being Premier League clubs, a lot of money's coming into the club. So these banks are very, I suppose, certain they will get the money back. So they do offer transfer factoring funds to the clubs for signing players. Now, I did mention last week, loan, loanee, loaning club, loans. It's a lot of terms here that I used. I just want to clarify, when I say loaning, I meant loaning club. So let's make it clear. The term loaning is a club that the player's been loaned to. That's very important, not the parent club. Now, with your observations, I'm going to actually use a recent deal, a loan deal. What you mentioned there about option to buy and difference to obligation to buy. We know that Sofyan Amrabat from Fiorentina has been brought to Manchester United. Manchester United obviously got limitations with financial fair play or sustainability rules, how much they can spend to the end of the transfer window. So they went for a loan move. They paid about, I believe, $8 million for a loan fee for Amrabat. With the deal containing clause, we could see the transfer become permanent. And when I say become, they negotiate an option to buy as part of the deal and not an obligation to buy. So it's an option. There's a difference. An obligation to buy would make the transfer automatic at the end of the season, as long as there was a trigger. For example, Amrabat played a certain amount of games, a certain amount of goals or whatever it may be. However, under this option to buy, United can cease to have an agreement with Amrabat at the end of the season because he's actually a Fiorentina player to 2015. And they have that option. It's not a permanent deal. Gives them a get out because it's an option clause if they want to trigger it.
Yeah, this financial prudence from clubs and them being, as I said, a bit more cautious now rather than just throwing money around in a transfer window is something agents are going to have to adapt to. And I even think we may be on the edge of a big change in the football transfer market and how agents work in the future. And if it was like playing a game of chess and poker at the same time before, I think we can even switch that up now to a game of three-dimensional chess and two hands of poker at the same time. Now, you know I'm a big fan of the NFL draft. I like the drama of it. I like the dynamics of it. And I think we could see the whole football transfer environment move to one more akin to the NFL, but without the draft element, where agents not only need to be aware of club squads and who they've got on their roster and predicting potential incomings and outgoings, but also they need to be more aware of the financial position of clubs, not just the present situation at the time of a transfer, but also their past, their existing commitments, their financial restrictions, and also their possible future plans financially. Now, I mentioned the NFL, and yes, the draft does have a different dynamic to that of the football transfer window, as it's arguably far more structured. But there are situations where an NFL team may write off one draft pick or a whole round of picks 1 year to have a better position in a future draft. Or alternatively, they throw everything at it 1 year, knowing they have to then restrict themselves in future years. So with that in mind, could we possibly see football clubs doing a more feast or famine type approach? Yes, most businesses pace themselves and budget over time, but this isn't most businesses. This is the crazy world of football.
I'm going to pick 2 points here. One about the draft. I'm going to address the draft. But this feast and famine type approach for clubs, we work with transfer windows. And there's a quote from 2019, which I think applies how the two transfer windows, the January and the summer window in Europe, how clubs see those. And I'm taking the European perspective here because transfer windows vary around the world. I'm going to take a quote from 2009 from Andrea Sartori, KPMG's, which is the big accounting firm, global head of sports and leader of KPMG's football benchmark team. I believe he sets out the dynamics of the January window. We mentioned how quiet it was. This is the quote. We often hear top managers questioning the value of the January transfer period. The maximum 12-week summer window after a completed season offers the time for strategic thinking and build-up. Managers focus on longer-term planning and aim to strengthen their squads accordingly. In contrast, the January 4-week winter period is more about filling the gaps, finding quick and short-term solutions to injuries, lack of form, often amid tense competition mid-season to reach better positions, for example, to get into European competition or to avoid relegation. Consequently, the biggest deals are usually negotiated during the summer, where transfers are driven by vision compared to mini January deals motivated mainly by necessity. I think that really encapsulates this approach that clubs are taking. It's only really necessity in the January window unless a player is at a good price. Now, with drafts, that's actually a different transfer concept. We know that drafts are linked to leagues that have more about equilibrium, the competitiveness of the competition, but they don't have relegation. But we had a recent draft in football, in soccer, National Soccer Women's League in the US, where college players are drafted.
Another interesting concept I can envisage in football is that although it's always been the players who are the talent and always will be, then we have the coaches and the managers, then the so-called sporting directors and directors of football. More recently, we've had the stats whizzes who do the recruitment based on stats in the advent of Moneyball theory and similar approaches. So is it time now for the accountants and the finance whizzes to step into the breach and become one of the most valuable assets to a football club with ingenious tax treatments and balancing financial fair play? This is, again, a key role in NFL organisations to assist the general manager in balancing the books over time and making finances work with such things as salary caps and cost controls there. Because with the way we may be going with sanctions against clubs, it isn't just a finance director or accountant saving the club money in terms of tax or avoiding financial fines. They could save a club as many points as a goalkeeper in a season, if not even save them from relegation, with avoiding these point deduction sanctions. Who knows, maybe there'll even become a time when agents start to represent the finance guys also. If not that, agents and agencies also start to rely more heavily on good finance people within their own organisations to increasingly analyse and forecast a club's financial positions to help with the agent's strategy in the transfer windows.
Some very interesting points and maybe some very interesting trends that may happen in the future. But I am actually going to preempt our discussion. We're going to discuss our view of the FIFA Law Annual Review, the FLA. And you mentioned finance. And on this topic, one of the presentations actually fits in right here. It's actually an interesting observational presentation made by European Club Association legal counsel from Portugal, Jose Andrade, who presented at the FLA. He talked about the financial sustainability regulations, and he actually broke it down, something that all agents probably need to know about each club. He actually broke down what are the push and pull factors financially about clubs. There's instability with clubs and the transfer market. A lot of clubs, their revenues are local, but the cost side to get global talent is global. So clubs are trying to balance, make money locally, but will have to spend money globally. Very interesting pull factor there. Clubs are faced with fixed contracts. They've got committed costs there. It's a double-edged sword. Yes, they can transfer players on fixed contracts, but they also have to pay salaries for players maybe they don't want. Some clubs rely on the transfer market, depending on transferring players to balance the books. You mentioned about balancing the books. And then they've got the agents. That agents possibly drive inflationary pressure, but that's their job. They need to get better deals for their players, but also got to get a commission from deals. But also acknowledge that a lot of clubs, their budget is mismanaged. Now, why do I raise this? I think going forward, agents need to know more about the financial position of clubs. And they probably will, because we know UEFA is bringing in the sustainability also rules, and they're going to have, I think, which was mentioned in this presentation by Mr. Andrade of ECA, European Club Association, the squad cost rule. And this sets out the pitch controls for the cost of 70% of club revenue that can be paid for players. Now, finance directors going forward will probably have to share some of this information with agents. What is happening with player budgets, the impact, the transfers, the amortization, agent fees, and what it's the profit, loss, and players' wages. Now, I've seen this in more control cost environments like, for example, Australia, we have a salary cap. And a lot of times when you're negotiating a deal and you see this, the football director or the finance director of the club will say, this is how much we've got left in the cap or in the budget. And they'll explain it because they'll show that this has been taken up by the players and this is what's available. So I think you're on a good point here, Jonathan, that agents will need to know more about the financial position of clubs, and clubs have to be more transparent through their finance guys about their financial position.
It's just such a complex and evolving landscape, and agents need to be aware and need to be able to adapt to these situations involving club finances and limitations. But the other aspect, you mentioned the FLA briefly, and the legal aspects of football and football agency work are just as important. And as we mentioned in the introduction, the closing days of the transfer window coincided with FIFA's FLA in Tokyo. Now, it's probably not an event many agents have penciled in their diaries as one not to be missed, but the initial agenda released a few months ago for this year did seemingly have a key focus on agent issues. Now, maybe this was FIFA not envisaging the problems with the FFAR, the FIFA football agent regulations, that have panned out since the FLA was planned. But there were some very good, interesting presentations, Peter. Yeah, there were some that required a considerable amount of caffeine to get through, but the FLA is probably more your area than mine. So what were your takeaways from this year?
When I looked at the agenda, I didn't think it was as strong as, say, previous editions, but I was quite impressed. Firstly, I want to say it was great that it was held in this part of the world, Asia, Japan, Tokyo. As we know, Asia does create a lot of the football economy, a lot of money, TV rights money comes from Asia for the Premier League. And we know that Japan, Korea, Australia, Saudi Arabia, getting bigger, stronger, more players. I actually like practical presentations, especially for agents. We're practical people as much as we need our regulatory knowledge. Daniel Cravo, the Brazilian lawyer from Porto Alegre, done a lot of deals, especially with Brazilian players into Europe. His presentation on the do's and don'ts of transfers is one I would recommend agents look at, and particularly his comments on sell-ons. I know that I covered in the last episode, the say four major transfer clauses or transfer agreement clauses. But he's gone into more of a, I would say, a South American angle, which a lot of transfers come from, but a very, very good presentation. I was also impressed this time with Sophia Thomas on tax. We covered tax with Peter Fairchild in episode 26, which is a very good episode. And I recommend listeners go back to hear Pete Fairchild. The missed opportunity for me, and I want to be critical because I think this is a project of FIFA's that's really helping people, not just the lawyers, but the agents as well, is I would have liked to see a presentation more on the Asian football landscape and dynamic. Maybe a possibility of someone from the Asian Football Confederation to present on the unique features of Asia. This was an opportunity. Unfortunately, it wasn't there.
For me, there were a few presentations I was keen to watch and listen to. And that wasn't just the ones from FIFA relating directly to agents, which I'll come back to in due course. As you said, Daniel Cravo certainly didn't disappoint and prompted a lot of thought-provoking discussion. Rather than just lecturing on things, he spoke about economic rights, contingent fees versus fixed fees, and assignments of credits and debits, all affecting agents. And then there were presentations I didn't think would be of much interest or use, but they were useful from an agent perspective, and I wouldn't have thought that to begin with. The presentation by, and I apologise for the pronunciation here, Vanessa Planyanikova and Americo Espalagas from FIFA's Player Status Department. That is well worth a watch for those agents who are working with female players and understanding the rights of those players and also some of the things that can go wrong relating to those rights that they have. And you mentioned the presentation on the Swiss Federal Court and its relation to FIFA. That was by Massimo Coccia, who is a CAS arbitrator, and he spoke about it. And although it's not the most thrilling of topics, and he admitted that himself at the start, I actually found it really useful in understanding aspects with regards to FIFA decisions and the legal hierarchy of disputes. And these disputes are, again, things that agents may be subject to either directly or indirectly at some time in the future. So I found it really useful.
Yeah, I think overall, all the presentations were useful. We mentioned Cravo. Andrade, the European Club Association presentation, was very good to understand where it's all heading with club sustainability. I mentioned Sophia Thomas was very good, but also very practical scenario where she presents tax. She actually used a bit of storytelling and worked through a player deal, which was very interesting. And also addressed one of the major issues that a lot of agents don't understand, and we've covered it to Pete Fairchild, Nick Ross and getting an indemnity. The one thing I will say is that the FLA is becoming an annual event, and I would recommend agents really getting on board. And we'll put it on the show notes, the link. If you haven't seen it already, you can see a lot of these presentations on repeat. And I think it'd be worth your time. If you're doing something else, just listen to them because they're very informative and they're showing the direction where a lot of things are going.
There was a presentation on the FIFA Clearinghouse, and there's been a few of these at previous FLAs in the past. And reflecting back on those, it does seem to me that FIFA may have hit the buffers on the topic of the clearinghouse and stalled to an extent. Now, this may be because they were too ambitious at the start and FIFA have overreached on the original timelines they envisaged with the clearinghouse. There was no mention of agent payments being processed through the clearinghouse this time. Well, from what I recall, I don't know if you heard anything. But it's still part of FIFA's mantra elsewhere when it comes to agent regulations that the clearinghouse will process agent commissions. Also, from a project and processes standpoint, putting my historic hat on here, I can see a lot of problems existing now and in the future for FIFA with regards to the clearinghouse. And that is even before the processing of agent commissions comes into the equation. So I think it's safe to say our prediction still stands of agent commissions not being handled by the FIFA clearinghouse for some time to come. In fact, still a few years yet. So enough of the pleasantries. Can I speak about the other FIFA presentations that either disappointed or at times somewhat infuriated me?
You can, but before I give you the microphone to do that, I agree. I mimic your thoughts. I wasn't that impressed with the clearinghouse presentation. I wanted more detail. How would we work with reagents? Is there an interrelationship between the clearinghouse, TMS, the agent portal, the national systems? I really wanted to see something a bit more detailed from an agent's perspective. Also, I think some of the questions asked in the question and answer were poor. I'm sorry for this observation. I remember watching people ask questions. Some were good questions, but some questions were not insightful. When asking a question, especially at these conferences, you've got to ask for informative, insightful information. Poor questions take momentum out of a conference. I just expect a little bit better on the Q&As because I think you can really unpack important issues if the right questions are asked. That's just one observation from me.
Okay, brace yourself. The presentation at the FLA that did directly relate to agents was from Emily Devlin, the Deputy Chief Legal and Compliance Officer at FIFA. And firstly, I don't envy her in delivering this presentation at this time with all that is happening and has happened and the current situation with the FFAR. And she actually commented that she had the graveyard shift in her presentation on day one of the FLA. And I would say she got the presentation no one else wanted. In fact, it's worth noting that FIFA's head of agents, Luis Villas-Boas Perez, didn't deliver this presentation, was seemingly absent from the FLA. In a similar way, he's absent from this show, despite the open invitation. But he may well be coming to an agents event very soon, so we believe, which will be interesting. But back to Emily Devlin's presentation. What I would say is that it was very measured, if not carefully scripted, understandably, but there were a few statements and snippets of information that caught my attention. The first one is she spoke about calls for transfer reform from various bodies, including EU political bodies and the UK government, as well as expressions of concern regarding activities of some player agents. Now, that's nothing new, and it was nothing new pre-2015 when FIFA deregulated. It was actually representatives of the AFA, who I was involved with at the time, the Association of Football Agents in England, who were meeting with UK government officials to express concern about FIFA's envisaged deregulation. And in addition to that, the AFA and EFA, the European Football Agents Association, had representatives who were speaking with EU political people. So I thought it important we just put that right as well and show that agents have actually been more concerned and more vocal about this 2015 and before and since. Also, in the presentation with regards to the FFAR, it was quoted that there were three drafts. Now, I'm not certain that's accurate. Maybe there were three official ones, and one in particular we saw, Peter, was an utter mess. Then there was said there was more than 300 suggestions received for the FFAR, but there wasn't any actual count on how many were considered by FIFA, how many they implemented, or how many they later retracted after early implementing them. I must have submitted more than 100 suggestions and comments myself, probably closer to 200 over time. From what I can tell, they implemented a few, almost verbatim, and then some of these were retracted in later drafts. It was also claimed there were multiple submissions, but again, no count of how many or who those submissions were from. Then it was spoken about the AWG, the Agent Working Group, which was apparently established to provide constant communication with agents. So in a year, the AWG has had two meetings. There's been no notes, no updates, no minutes sent to licensed agents, as far as I'm aware. So where is this constant communication? We have probably relayed more information about the FIFA Agent Working Group meetings than FIFA have to the agents. And that is thankfully to members of the FIFA Agent Working Group and not FIFA, who have shared this information with their members if they're smaller agent associations, but those outside of those organisations haven't been privy to that information. And on that note, multiple FIFA officials have had the invitation to come on the agent's angle to communicate and have either turned it down or avoided it on several occasions. Another interesting point, and this threw me a bit because I didn't think there were this many, But it was stated there's been 13 challenges to the FFAR in Europe alone. I'm not sure how accurate that is or how many there have been globally or whether that included those that hadn't even started because they were waiting for other challenges to be concluded or get underway. And the final point on this presentation, there was a common FIFA infographic used in a slide on why did FIFA regulate or re-regulate? And again, at the bottom of this graphic, it has something that catches my eye all the time. And that is the topic of creditor listed as one of the reasons for re-regulating. And it refers to the lack of protection of the agent as creditor. But again, this was conveniently skimmed past in this presentation, as it has been in other such presentations going back many months, if not years.
Interesting thoughts, Jonathan. I would say Emily Devlin's presentation on the FIFA football agent regulations, current status, reasons why it's come on board, litigation, etc. I think her presentation was more about the current state of the regulations and where all this litigation's at. She presented actually a slide of all the current litigation actions by agents, which I found actually very informative because it's a snapshot of where everything is and what stage it's at. And we know the end game, people believe, is the European Court of Justice, but it's not that simple because the European Court of Justice only governs Europe. But it was good to see where everything is at the moment because a lot of uncertainty and limbo, especially in legal and regulatory terms. Also, I like that she sort of explained a little bit better the German cases, which I think some pundits, especially some media pundits, have reported those cases in maybe a misconstrued way and their effect and what analysis was there and the way it's been argued. So I was glad that she addressed the German cases in her slides. Look, she was not a party to the engagement process that a lot of agents undertook with FIFA. From what I recall, she's more managing the legal regulatory challenges. So maybe on this occasion, she's not aware of that whole previous engagement. Yes, the message has to go out, what happened, how FIFA saw things, who they engaged with. But I think this presentation was more of an update of where engagement was, litigation was, where the regs are at, and where we're going to from here. We know that the FIFA lawyers, and this was mentioned, I think, by Emilio, could have been, I'm not so sure, can't recall, but one of the FIFA presenters, that they're moving the legal department to Miami, USA. I'm actually quite interested to see how is that going to impact the agent regulations going forward. And why I say that is Americans do sport agency differently. They do have some caps. They have collective bargaining agreements. Agents are regulated through the players' unions. I wonder whether some influence from the American lawyers or the American landscape is going to have an effect on FIFA's view on the FFAR or FIFA football agents regulations going forward. We're all in a waiting position till the European Court of Justice case, but I'm going to be interested in see how the American experience is going to affect FIFA's position on agency, Jonathan.
And on the subject of America, now I'll say what some of our American friends may call real doozies from this presentation that may not have been scripted or intended to be part of the presentation, but I think it says a lot in terms of FIFA's stance on FFAR, their stance on agents, and again, demonstrates a lack of understanding. The first one is that it was stated that certain agents or groups of agents won't or wouldn't accept the cap. So I think that's a bit of an understatement because from my perspective, looking at this over time, the majority won't accept the cap. It isn't that hard to comprehend this fact, given the number of challenges, the objections and the dialogue FIFA have had with agents now going back 5 years in this case, and even further on some matters. Number two, it was stated the exam and license was controversial. Again, this seems to be FIFA projecting inaccurately, similar to the previous point on the objection to the cap. I think I'm right in saying that the exam and license were amongst the least controversial elements of FFAR for agents. In fact, I'll stick my neck out and say most agents, especially legacy ones, welcomed it and encouraged it. Maybe it's FIFA's implementation and exam format that was the controversial element. Number three, referring back to 2015 with deregulation, I think it was meant, and I quote, "The hope was agents might move themselves towards a system of self-regulation and governance without need for oversight." I'll be quite honest, I almost fell off my chair when I heard this, as it is the first time I've heard it spoken by FIFA. But then again, a lot of the current people from FIFA talking about 2015, as you rightly said, weren't there at the time and weren't involved. Hence, I think some mistakes and inaccurate representation is being made. In fact, this notion of self-regulation was attempted to be used against me and the agent's case from Profa by FIFA's counsel at CAS to try and catch me out, but it didn't. Yes, some agents have pushed for self-regulation for many years, whether being genuine or for self-preservation. But personally, I don't believe self-regulation solely by the agents will work. They've got to be involved in the regulation, of course. But FIFA and other football authorities have never demonstrated any interest, encouragement, or support in agents taking this path. As everyone is aware, in 2015, it was the member associations who FIFA effectively passed agent regulatory responsibility to with RWWI, the regulation working with intermediaries. Number four, agents were referred to as a profession. This is something many in the industry have been striving for a long, long time, but received, again, little support or encouragement from the likes of FIFA or other football stakeholders.
Just to be transparent, Jonathan, we're always transparent. You were a specialist witness for some people who don't know, have joined a podcast maybe in later episodes. In the CAS hearing between Profa and FIFA, you were a specialist witness on behalf of Profa on the argument whether the FIFA football agent regulation should come into effect and whether they...
A specialist witness on behalf of agents.
Yes, and Profa being the organisation in that. Now, going back to your points... I agree most agents will not accept such low ball caps. That's not even worth arguing. You mentioned self-regulation. That's been discussed over years from different agent groupings, and that's never really happened. I haven't seen any alternative model. I mean, who would be the regulator in self-regulation? That's a whole question in itself. We know that at least with agent regulations, as long as they're fair and fulfill the laws and competition laws, FIFA or the national associations should be the regulator in this instance. In terms of, you mentioned the legacy agents, I'm going to be a little bit different to you, Jonathan. I think the legacy agent view, when we say legacy agents, are the agents who had a license pre-2015, who then the intermediary regulations came on board, lost their licenses, but they regained them under the new system because they proved they were still continuing to do business as intermediaries, and they proved that to FIFA and the National Association, so got their license back. A lot of them would say, this is about the exam, you mentioned their view on the exam was great to be back, but a lot of them will say that this exam is easier than when they did it, and the pass rates were much, much lower pre-2015. I want to focus on the issue of profession, and are the agents a profession? Some of the big super agents in the past have quoted that we are a profession, or it's a career. It's a 24/7 agent would say that they are a profession. Basically, a different type of agent. There's buyer's agents, insurance agents. There's human resource professionals that do HR, human resources in companies, recruitment. They would say they're professionals. The football agency game or business is a profession for a lot of people. And depending on where you're at, and we know France has state laws, it would be a profession. So FIFA needs to understand that a lot of people recognize this as a profession.
And as though you thought my appraisal of the agent presentation was forensic enough, this is the point where Peter holds his head in his hands and wonders what I'm going to say now on the two remaining parts of the flaw that caught my eye. And no one can say we didn't warn them in previous episodes that feet wouldn't be held to the fire on such matters. So Peter, light the fire and I will literally hold their feet. The first one I'm going to scrutinise was on day two of the FLA, and the presentation was by Jan Kleiner, FIFA's Director of Football Regulator Subdivision that deals with the transfer system, including agents. And his presentation was supposedly on the global football transfer picture, 2023 figures. And he did invite critical feedback, so here goes. Now, this presentation, as per the title, wasn't on agents as such. However, rather unsurprisingly for me, there was an undertone of agents and FFAR in his presentation. This included an effort to labour points on agents on several occasions, Of his 27 or so slides, there was roughly 20% of them solely on agent matters, and other slides also referenced agents. And he also mentioned agent matters on another 20 occasions separately, whether directly or indirectly. But just some rather specific takeaways from what he said. On one particular slide entitled Completed Reforms and Projects, FFAR was listed. But I think it's safe to say FFAR is far from completed. Notably, he skirted around actually verbally mentioning that from that slide. Yet then later in the presentation, there was a contradiction, it seems, when FFAR was listed as an ongoing project, which is more accurate, I think we can safely say. He said that numbers don't lie, and generally they don't. However, they can be grossly misinterpreted, misrepresented, and people can mislead with so-called spin, which in my view, and that of many others, FIFA in their reports are very good at spinning the stats when it comes to presenting a desired narrative, not least on agents. So with that spin in mind, he highlighted on one chart the rate of growth in agent fees for 2022 to 2023, both verbally and visually on the chart. Yet didn't do the same for the rate of growth in transfer fees for the same period. Now, as I stated on previous episodes, I'm no statistical whiz, so if I'm wrong on this, I apologise. But from my research and using FIFA's figures, the rate of growth in transfer fees for that period was a higher rate of growth, percentage-wise, than the agent fees for the same period. But predictably, that wasn't highlighted in the presentation by FIFA. On a similar narrative, he commented that the assumption that many may have that a rise in transfer fees correlates to a rise in agents' fees, he said was incorrect, because he claims agents' fees have increased at a greater rate yearly compared to transfer fees, seemingly insinuating this had happened every year, which again, from my research and again using FIFA's numbers, is again incorrect, as agent fees increased at a lower annual percentage compared to transfer fees for 2016-2017, 2019-2020, 2021-2022, and 2022-2023. And then in 2019-2020, it was roughly the same. There was only a 0.6% difference. But that year was an anomaly, and both figures actually decreased by over 20% for that year. And I think we can put the pandemic in as an effector there. And notably, I haven't tried to spin those figures. It's just a very simple Excel spreadsheet. As I said, I may be wrong, so I would welcome anyone more statistically minded to scrutinise those FIFA claims and figures with the aims of transparency, of course. There was also mention of a big rise in clubs engaging agents, and that was highlighted. And I dare say that highlights a potential problem for FIFA to address, one where it may arguably get worse when you look at the FFAR disparity for the proposed cap on agents' fees when it comes to representing transferring clubs or selling clubs. So that is off my chest for now. Just to say, I accept FIFA's seeming desire for spinning these stats. I'm used to it by now. They do it. Member associations do it. Leagues do it. The media do it. And agent associations have been known to do it, all to feed the desired narrative. But if you're going to do it, at least get your facts right when talking about your own stats. And as an aside, the scary thing for me is that Mr. Kleiner also stated his work has become much, much more data-driven, and that this data provides a solid and factual basis for what they implement, which, if misinterpreted data is being used by FIFA, will it be leading to improper, unworkable, or unfair implementation of new regulations and policy? And just to finish off Mr. Kleiner's presentation, he spoke about the future and the agent market being an almost unregulated market. Whether that was now or in the future, it wasn't quite clear what he meant.
Very interesting commentary, Jonathan. You did some deep dive on the transfer fees and agent fees correlation. Some very interesting findings. I'm going to stay positive. I'm going to just focus on two points that Mr. Jan Klein has said that I think agents should know. And they're the two key trends. One, players are transferring internationally at a younger age. Very interesting trend. I would say with the TMS system, you probably can substantiate that trend. And two, players are transferring clubs more often. So very common for players to transfer to more clubs in their career. So very interesting trends. And they feed into the agent business because agents are about international deals and keeping players' careers moving. So very, very interesting there by Jan Klein. And now, overall, I think it was a very good FLA. I'm going to refer to the Chief Legal Compliance Officer of FIFA. He did the introduction, Emilio Garcia Silveira. He's opening and closing. He set the tone for this FLA, and I think he set a good tone because FIFA, and he also had a court arbitration and sport football law experts, his emphasis was about this FLA is to share knowledge and trends. So these are big ticket items that were discussed. We obviously talked about the agent regulations. They talk about jurisprudence, do's and don'ts in transfer deals, tax, the new sustainability rules in European club football, all very interesting topics. And I commend FIFA for continuing to do this. And he also announced two important, would say, priorities this year for FIFA, the amendment of its statutes, but also the women labor conditions minimum. So women's football, the labor conditions for players in women's football, there will be some minimums. That's fantastic. Now, I did also hear, and I'm sure I heard this, Jonathan, that Emilio also said that the agent regulations, the topic of agent regulations was an amazing and interesting area, which really made my ears prick up because I think that's what it is. It shows agents are at the forefront of regulations for FIFA, and it's a key area, not just for FIFA, but also all stakeholders. The transfer market and agents, a lot of people follow that. A lot of fans follow that. A lot of football aficionados, clubs, players, obviously agents themselves. Everyone's interested in what agents are doing, and that's what this show's about. But also, I would say, using the term amazing and interesting area applies to the whole agents angle or agent space as well, Jonathan.
I didn't actually pick up on him referring to the agent regulations as amazing and interesting the first time around. I went back and listened to it when you mentioned it, and he did say it. So that's encouraging in a way. But I did note how he conveniently sidestepped the topic of agents at this FLA, both in the introduction and the closing statements, which in a lot of ways is surprising because he's been seemingly so steadfastly, some would say stubbornly, involved in trying to steamroll the FFAR through. And how vocal he's been in the past on the topic of agents, whether it be presentations, comments in the media, and various agent meetings from Zurich to Montevideo. Also, from what we can gather from other presenters at the FLA, it seems that it is he who assigns the topics to present it at the FLA. And with that in mind, it isn't an unreasonable presumption that he would have had a key hand in Jan Kleiner's presentation and that of Emily Devlin's presentation in one way or another. But it seems either as a whole or in part, FIFA are stubbornly pushing ahead with FFAR, probably pinning all their hopes on the ECJ decision rather than trying to find a compromise. Or are they? But even with the ECJ finding in FIFA's favour, it's very difficult for a turnaround in the likes of England and Brazil now.
Yes, ECJ, European Court of Justice, just to make that clear for any listeners. For me, it was very interesting FLA, and that concludes the roundup of what we noted from the FLA on agent-related matters. I urge any agents, if you get a chance, go onto the FIFA legal portal. It's all there, and go have a look at some of these presentations. And you can even take some pictures of some of the slides. They're very informative for your business. Now, this FLA was interspersed in, must have been 9 to 10 hours over 2 days, and a lot of it related to agents. Some didn't, but they were very interesting topics. Now, we didn't obviously mention there was a presentation from Gianni Infantino and Emilio Garcia Silveira. They mentioned something else about FIFA developing some form of algorithm to calculate transfer values. First time I've heard of an algorithm. That's very interesting news and would raise a lot of interest from people watching the FLA, an algorithm on players and the transfer values of players. But no doubt we'll come back to this on another episode once we hear more. It did take us by surprise, took a lot of people by surprise, this algorithm announcement. Also, the media worldwide picked it up. And Stanley, the European Club Association representative of the FLA as well. But just as we close today, I want to pivot back straight into an agent story. an article related to the transfer window, and one reported transfer that fell through, supposedly down to a dispute between an agent and a second agent that represents the player. So the first article is from Enoch Forson from the Ghana News, 3 News. It's Ibrahim Osman's Premier League dream shattered over agent fee disputes. And when I saw that title, Jonathan, it really piqued my interest. Now, we're talking about young Ghanaian forward Ibrahim Osman's dream. He wanted to go to the Premier League. He was at a club by the name of Nordjylland in Denmark. Nordjylland are known as a club model that develops talent and transfers at the bigger clubs. That's what kind of club it is. And it was a transfer to West Ham. And the reason for it was a disagreement over agent fees. About an $80 million deal, the article says. It was agreed between the two clubs, but the issue arose because of Osman's agent wanted or demanded a high, unusual commission for themselves. However, it came to light that the agent wasn't Osman's legally recognized agent. In fact, it was an English agent, Daryl Powell, who had the valid representation agreement. Now, we all know with the FFAR in a bit of a flux that in this case, the dispute went to the Danish Football Association, who's still proactive, even though a lot of associations nationally have, I suppose, suspended their regulations, and they're dealing with who represents Osman's interests. And there was a second article on this, which mentioned the deal is off. West Ham transfer message agent drama sees Hammers signing collapse. This is from Sport Witness. And both agents in this case have been basically informed that the football agent rules don't allow the agent, which was Mitch Backovins, to represent Osman Abrahami. It's basically there's a valid representation agreement with Darren Powell, the English agent, which is still valid. So this deal collapsed. So this shows that the difficulty when 2-3 agents get involved in the deal and we don't know where things stand. Obviously, the Danish FA get to the bottom of it. But we also had news that Brighton joined the Osman chase. But I will say this. It's a pity that potential transfers, especially during the January window, and they come to this because parties are not budging who represents. It seems there may be layers of complication here in this case. Maybe the paperwork that relates to agents is not fully clear or how the player wants to proceed. We've seen quite a few of these cases. A couple of agents are emerging and the deal breaks down because of agent disagreement or agents fighting over the deal and they're at odds of representation, but it's not over yet, I believe, Jonathan.
Yeah, again, as in a lot of these situations, it seems to have degenerated into a bit of a mess. And when Fabrizio Romano comments on it and describes it as really complicated without too much actual detail as to why, it no doubt is exactly that complicated. And I will come back to it. There is an update to this story that broke just a few hours ago before we started recording. But on the initial story, some of the reports seem to be a bit conflicting or don't highlight some of the agent matters that you've spoken about in the articles that you refer to, and the agent dispute being at the heart of all this frustration. Some have intimated it was more a transfer fee issue, but that line could be blurred to actually include an agent complication, whether it be fees or a split of the agent fees. In fact, some media channels were speculating on this transfer to West Ham some 2 weeks ago, maybe even a month. So you would have thought things could have been sorted out between the various parties rather than still being in midair in what was the last few hours of the transfer window. Mediation could be a useful tool in these circumstances, Peter. Sorry, I had to get the plug in. But if the dispute was from the agent side of things, as you spoke about, is true, it shows what a mess we are in generally with the agent regulation confusion at the moment caused by FFAR. The last time I checked, both agents mentioned are licensed by FIFA and both are licensed with the English FA. So there's no question there about fake agents, it would seem. And I would guess that the DBU, the Danish FA, it is the same, but I can't 100% confirm that they're both licensed there as well. Now, in an ideal world, we would have the FIFA agents chamber to step in here, as I would say it's a dispute with an international dimension. But with the partial suspension of FFAR, as per Circular 1873, there doesn't seem to be an agents chamber operating currently in terms of new disputes. And as Jan Kleiner intimated at the FLA, when referring to the agents chamber, he said, and I quote, once it is back up and running. Now, it's not totally unheard of for a national DRC, a dispute resolution chamber, at a member association to hear a dispute with an international dimension if it's clearly defined that there's an opt-out in the relevant agreement or contract. Also, it's unclear whether there is actually a dispute here or whether the Danish association have stepped in to clarify what is permitted and what is not, as potentially there could be a breach of agent regulations here by the club, by an agent, and or the player, or those in combination.
That's true, Jonathan. It's good that the Danish FA has got involved. They must have received a complaint by one of the parties. With all this confusion, as you mentioned, of the agent regulations, we still need some alternative dispute resolution or national dispute resolution. It's good that the Danish Football Association has come in to try to resolve it, or at least get to the bottom of it in case there is a breach. You mentioned mediation. That would be a great tool here between the two agents. Quick, fast, and efficient, especially during a transfer window when you want to get things done very quickly. If the parties are invested in mediation and consent to a resolution, that's the quickest way.
But as we said, Peter, this story has changed a bit in the last hour or so, and we're recording on Wednesday morning, UK time, the 7th of February. And David Ornstein in The Athletic is reporting this morning that Brighton have reached an agreement with Nordjylland to sign the player. But reading between the lines, it broke very, very quickly. But reading between the lines, it is just an agreement between the clubs, obviously not a transfer just yet. And the old caveat of subject to a medical is thrown in for good measure, which is more complicated from a regulatory and legal aspect than many may think. But that's probably a topic for you for another day. So have the clubs sorted out the agent issue, or is that one now something they have a bit of time to focus on with no rush to get a transfer done by a specified deadline? Maybe there is an agreement now that one agent can represent the engaging club and the other represent the player and the releasing club, or some other combination to get things to move forward.
Interesting developments. There you go. Thought we were on top of it, and then all of a sudden it happens, and that's it. The window's fast. Things happen very quickly and turn. And at the end of the day, it's all about the players' interests. If clubs are interested, they need to get the players that they seek. And agents need to work quickly, and disputes are not good for agents if they delay business, as they're not good for clubs and players. And with that, this brings us to an end of a long and somewhat in-depth episode of The Agent's Angle. But with the transfer window and the FLA both happening at the same time of year, along with the Asia Cup and the African Cup of Nations, it does make the calendar this time of year somewhat heavy. As always, if you have any questions, please do not hesitate to send them in either by social media or on the email address questions@theagentsangle.com. And also, as ever, those likes, subscribes, sharing the show are always very welcome. As we mentioned last week, our next scheduled episode's in 2 weeks' time. But if anything urgent or hot, as I say it, in the agent's world happens between now and then, we will endeavour to bring up that episode in that intervening period. So for this period, it's bye from me.
Yes, folks, go and put your feet up if you can, as the January transfer window was a bit quieter than normal. But as we know, an agent's work is never done throughout the year, despite what some may have you believe. Well, not for many, I would hasten to add. And just keep this thought at the forefront of your mind. As a senior FIFA official once said, the topic of football agents is amazing and interesting. Well, the regulations anyway. Bye, everyone.
The purpose of the Agent's Angle podcast is to provide news, information and facilitate discussion on regulatory matters, policies, business trends and issues affecting football agents worldwide. The opinions and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only and should never be considered legal or professional advice. Furthermore, the views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Thank you for listening.